Hello, hello. Welcome, everybody, to the latest Q&A in the Rainmaker Site Building Roadmap. We are very excited to be with you today. I am Jared Morris. I will be your guide through today's Q&A, and I will be joined, as I often am, by the great Chris Garrett. Let's hop into this and start answering some questions because we got a lot of good ones. So this is the second Q&A in our Blogging as Content Marketing series. This is a Q&A on using Rainmaker to turn blog traffic into subscribers. And of course, if you haven't yet watched the webinar that we did last week, which was provided a bunch of different tutorials about how to use Rainmaker to turn blog traffic into subscribers, we recommend that session. And this Q&A is a follow-up. And we had a lot of good questions submitted, and we are excited to dive in and start answering them. And we will start with Rena's question. So Rena has a small website on the Rainmaker platform, and she also has a huge website on the Synthesis platform. Both sites target the same audience and are for her same business. She is wondering if she can use Rainmail to capture subscribers on both websites. Her Synthesis-hosted website gets the lion's share of her traffic and action, so she wants to be sure that she has the ability to capture subscribers via Rainmail on both sites. And she'd also like to be able to use only Rainmail without having to also pay for an additional third-party system like AWeber or MailChimp. Is this possible? Well, here is some good news for you, Rena. It is possible. You can capture subscribers on both websites. The only caveat is that you will only be able to email them from your Rainmaker site, and I'll show you how that works here in just a second. But let's start out by talking about how you would do this. So the first thing that you would want to do is create a subscribe page on your non-Rainmaker site, because you're going to need a place on that non-Rainmaker site where you're going to get opt-ins from. And so I, for purposes of demonstration, have created a page on my site, assemblycall.com, where people can subscribe to Chris's site, Maker Hacks. Now, again, this is for, yes, and this is for purposes of demonstration only, because I'm not sure there's going to be a lot of overlap between my college basketball obsessed audience and Chris's Maker audience. Now, maybe, but you know, probably not. So
sports and nerds, let's think about that.
Hey, you know, it works out for us on these sessions, Chris. So, I mean, you never know.
True.
So as you can see, so I've got this page. So the question will be now, okay, how do I actually accept subscriptions, you know, for Chris's site on this page? So what I'm going to need to do is I need a form that will subscribe people to Chris's Rainmail list. And this, you know, goes along with the example that was given. Obviously, this is it's a little bit different because in the example, it's one person with a Rainmaker site and a Synthesis site. But what I'm going to talk about here applies to that exact same situation as well. So we've got this site. Now we need the form. All right. So what we need to do is we need to copy a Rainmail subscribe form. So if we go to MakerHacks.com and we go to Chris's subscribe page at MakerHacks.com, he already has this form on the subscribe page. And I can actually just go swipe this form, all right? So what you would do, Rena, is you would create the form on your Rainmaker site, and then you would basically swipe the form for your Synthesis-hosted website. Because obviously you can't create it in the back end on the Synthesis site. That's not built with Rainmaker. But you can swipe this form right here. And let me show you how you do that. So you want to right click anywhere on this page and then click view page source. All right. And that will bring up the actual source code of this page. And so when you see the page's source code, you want to find where the form is so that you can copy the code. Right. So you go up to edit, you click find. And then what that will allow you to do is enter a term and then you can find it on the page. It's just a much easier way than actually trying to scroll through here and find the term that you're looking for. So what you want to do is search for form, open bracket form. And the reason why you do that is that will help you find instances of the actual form code that you're looking for and filter out instances of just the word form. So again, it's all about quickness and efficiency here. And then when you do that, there it is. It will take you right to the form. And if you only have one form on the page, which is standard, you typically don't have more than one form on a page, then there will only be one instance of this actual form code with the bracket. So you know that's the code that you're going to copy. So what you do then is copy everything from the opening form tag to the closing form tag. You want to copy all of that. That's the form. And then take it back to your Synthesis site, right? So you're copying this from the Rainmaker site. Now you want to take it back to your other site and you want to paste the code that you just copied into the text editor of any poster page or into any text widget in a content area or landing page. So for the example that I'm showing you, here's that subscribe to Maker Hacks page from assemblycall.com. And I'm just going to paste that form code from Chris's site right here. And then what that will do is now Chris's form from makerhacks.com is on assemblycall.com. Now, as you can see, it adopts the style of the site that it's on. So it's got the red button, just like all of our other buttons on Assembly Call. So the style is different, but otherwise the form is exactly the same. And when I complete this form, you know, if I enter my email address, first name, last name, I am taken to the confirmation page on makerhacks.com. And I get an email in my inbox for me to confirm my subscription to makerhacks.com. Now, one kind of pro tip here that I would add is to create a better user experience, you should probably create a thank you or confirmation page on the same site the form is on. So Rena, in your case, you know, maybe the sites look pretty much the same, so it wouldn't disorient people by redirecting them to a new site. But it's always good to keep people oriented on that same website. So create that thank you or confirmation page that you're going to redirect people to after they submit the form and keep it on the same site. And so that's how you would do that. And that's how you would capture the subscription. And then the final step for this would be, now you've done that, now you actually need to send an email. So to send emails to the people, you know, who subscribed via your Synthesis website, you're still going to send the emails from your Rainmaker site. And so let me show you here. This is actually in the back end of digitalcommerce.com. And if you look at the different lists here, just in this very tiny piece of the screenshot, you can see that I can choose from lists for Copyblogger, for Authority, for StudioPress, for DCI. I can send emails to all of these people from Digital Commerce because it's all the same Rainmail account. Right? And the other thing that you notice is that you can vary the sender name and vary the sender email for any broadcast email. So if you need to use different names or emails based on the list that you're sending to, you can choose that at the broadcast email level. What you want to be careful of is that if you need the design to vary between the lists, this is where you want to make use of different templates and possibly even use a custom template. This too can be chosen at the individual email level. So it gives you some flexibility. And the other thing that I will just alert you to if you're going to do this is that these settings right here, and you find these settings by going to settings, little settings gear icon, and then Rainmail or email, these are going to apply to all of your emails. Okay, so this, you know, the header, the branding, those are going to apply to all of your emails. So obviously, you know, for all the emails that you're, that are being sent from this site. So you just want to be careful of that, because in case that header is not going to be appropriate, like obviously we wouldn't want to send an email to the Copyblogger list with the Digital Commerce Institute header on there, because that wouldn't be good. So you just want to be mindful of that and adjust that if you need to. But that is it. So hopefully that kind of answers that question and walks you through and shows you some of the flexibility of Rainmail and how you can use it across sites, because it obviously is very, very, very versatile. Chris, anything that you would add to that?
Yeah, obviously over time we're going to make this use case easier to achieve, but it's achievable today, but obviously there's a lot of steps. We're going to work to make it so it's easier to use Rainmail no matter what platforms you're using, but you know, we have to make progress towards that. It's not going to happen overnight.
Yep. All righty. Well, thank you for that question, Rena. That was excellent. And let's go on now to question number two from Peter. So Peter says, you spoke about subheads in the previous webinar. We did. You mentioned H1 tags for headlines and H3 tags for subheads. Regarding H1, does that mean that the tag should be at the top within the body of the page, or is that the title or both? What exactly is the protocol for optimal SEO, and how would you use and place the H1 tags within Rainmaker? Well, here's the great part about this question, Peter, and that is that all content pages on Rainmaker, or any content pages actually that use a StudioPress theme, are designed with the headline wrapped in an H1 tag. You don't need to do anything. So when you're creating a post or a page and you add your headline right up there at the top, the title of the page, that's going to be wrapped in an H1 tag. Okay. And the optimal practice is to have one and only one H1 tag on your page. And the reason for that is that the H1 tag, the goal of it is to clearly indicate to search engines what the page is about. So if you have an H1 tag there and then you try and use three different H1 tags throughout the page, now the search engines are all confused. They don't really know what your page is about because you're giving them way too much information. So that's why It's that H1 tag at the top. And then throughout the rest of your page, you would use H2 or H3 or H4, just depending on how you're setting all that up. We use H3 at Copyblogger, but you have, you know, kind of some different ways that you can do that, but only one H1 tag, and you don't have to actually do anything with it because with Rainmaker, it's taken care of for you. Just enter it in the headline and you're good to go. All right, moving on to question number three now, also from Peter. Peter says, I was not previously aware of the button possibilities. By copying the code that Jared showed in his demonstration about the Indiana artifacts, I've managed to produce a button link. Is there a good article within the knowledge base to explain how buttons are created, how you format their size, colors, etc.? So Peter, at present, and Amelia and Brian, please correct me if I'm wrong, but there is no knowledge base article that goes beyond explaining how to create that button. So how to add class equals button to your href code when creating a link. So it, now, if you do want to, you know, change the color, change the size as people do, you can reach out to support with the specifications that you would like your button to have. And usually they'll be able to just send you the CSS code that you can then add to your custom CSS field. So there's nothing, again, that kind of walks you through that in the knowledge base, but you can reach out to support and typically they'll be able to help you and give you the CSS that you need. Now, if they do that, well, and I should also say you can follow a few simple steps to edit the CSS on your own. And that's what I'm going to walk you through right now. The first step would be, you know, let's say that you've emailed support, they've sent you back some CSS. Okay, what do you do with the code that they just sent you? So here's a quick refresher on how to add custom CSS. Go to design and then click on custom CSS. And then you want to paste your CSS right here in this custom CSS field and then click save. And so that will add that custom CSS to your site. Now, if you want to be a little bit bolder, if you want to take matters into your own hands a little bit and not wait for support, you can also, you know, create some custom CSS using a tool like Chrome's Inspect Element tool. And I've gone over this in a previous session, but let me just do a quick refresher right here. So this is from the front page of assemblycall.com. We've got a big old button right there for people to watch or listen to the show. So notice that red button, okay? So if I'm in Google Chrome, I scroll over that button, I right click, and then I can choose inspect, okay? And you can't do that anywhere on the page. You want to go right there over the actual element that you're going to do, click inspect. And then you're going to see this entire section of the page come up over here with all this code, all right? So if you scroll down over here in the section where it says styles, you want to find the section of the code that is governing the button, all right? And a tip, especially if you're looking to change the color, is look for the color match. So you'll often see, you know, where it says background color and here's the color right there. Well, I can see that that's a match and it says button, so I can be pretty well sure that this is going to be the code that is governing, all right? Now, the nice thing to remember is any changes that you make here, any fiddling around that you do, it's only doing it in your browser. It's not actually changing anything on the site. So you can play around, make changes. If it doesn't change the section that you think, then maybe you found the wrong section, but at least you know and you can move on to the next section. So what you want to do then to change the color is click on the hex code, all right? And the hex code in this case is this number right here, D40319. So that's the hex code is always going to have, or is often going to have, six numbers and letters. So you want to click on that and you want to change it. So I just very simply changed it to FFF because that's white and it was just quick and easy so that I can see. And you'll notice how it's changed to white over here. All right. And that's good. So you see the change, but remember, nothing is actually happening on the live site. Now, what you want to do then to transfer this to your site is copy the entire section of code for that element. So you want to identify the previous section's little closing bracket tag and then copy everything through the next bracket tag. So you see how this one is not being copied, this one is being copied. You want to copy all of that and then go back over to your custom CSS field, paste the code that you just copied, and then click save. And once you do that, voila, your button will now be changed to the new color. And if you want to change that back, just go right back in here to custom CSS, delete this, save it, and it'll be back to normal how it was before. Chris, anything that you would add to
Amelia's got some generic code that she's going to share in the chat box. I'll not embarrass her by bringing her on the microphone, but she's going to share some code and tap it into the chat box. One of the things that I wanted to say about these buttons is you don't necessarily have to change the button style across the site. It can be per page. So you can drop some code into just that page, and there's a way to do that. Or what I've done in the past is actually done style equals in my HTML. So you use the code view rather than the what you see is what you get view. You use the code view and you just add style equals for that specific link that you want to make a button. So you know the CSS class, you can say it's a button, and then you can do style equals afterwards and change the background color. So if this was a one-off where you wanted to have one gray and one white, you could do that just on that specific link. And support, as always, can help you. So Amelia's pasted a message here saying, here's the code to change your buttons. So we'll also share that after the webinar.
Hey, Chris, Bob has an interesting question. He says, curious if he can copy CSS code from other sites. Like if he sees a button style that he likes on other sites, can he use the same process to get the code from that site? Or will there be differences in how it's coded that wouldn't necessarily apply from site to site?
Usually you can. One of the things you've got to remember about CSS is it stands for cascading style sheets. So just by grabbing that piece of code, you don't necessarily get all the things that it's inheriting. But using that approach that Jared used, where you can use the inspector and tweak and play around, you can paste the code you find and see if it does make a difference. And, you know, support are going to support you in if you find some button code that you really like and you can't get it to work, they will tell you what you're missing. We've got some real CSS gurus in the support team, like Amelia and Jen and a lot of the others. They can code CSS. That's their background. You know, they were often site builders and designers. So feel free to ask, because they'll point you in the right direction.
Yep. All right, let's move along now to our next question. This comes from Brian. So Brian says, your focus has primarily been on blogging. I'd welcome some guidance on whether it can be helpful to include vlogs, video blogs, and whether you think this is likely to be a coming trend. In what circumstances may it be beneficial or detrimental to a site? So Chris, let's dive into this. And I prepared some bullets here just for when to use video blogs. And I've got, I think, six of these for when to use video blogs. So let me read these, and then I'll be curious to get your thoughts, Chris, on if you agree with them and if there are any other that you would add.
When do we ever agree, Jared?
Well, that's true. So, okay, one use would be when the projected or and ultimately measured ROI is positive, right? So one thing to remember about doing video is that to do it well can be expensive, both from a monetary standpoint and from a time investment standpoint. So obviously you want to make sure that the return that you're going to get on this investment is positive. And that doesn't always have to be like, you know, dollar for dollar, hour for hour. I mean, you may be doing it for branding purposes, and so it may not be something that you can, again, track to the minute or track to the hour, but you certainly want to at least think about it and say, okay, this is a good idea, but is it the best idea that I could be investing my time in right now? So if you project that ROI is positive, okay, then maybe that it's something that you should do, but I would at least kind of have that conversation with yourself to make sure that you're not just doing it because it's a hot new thing, that you can actually project it to really give you a positive return. The next step is going to be when you can produce quality, all right? Because that's very important with video, is you don't just want to slap something together that's just half done, right? And it doesn't need to be, you know, you can do video blogs where it's just you sitting in front of your computer, but what does your background look like? What does the lighting look like? How is the audio? You know, and don't underestimate the importance of audio when it comes to video. People won't watch a video if the audio is bad. And a lot of times, you know, people will watch stuff on YouTube, but they're really just listening, not as much as watching, depending on what the video is. So make sure that you can produce quality video. I would also say, if the visual element doesn't actually add value, I would really think twice about why you're doing it. Now, again, some people use YouTube to listen to audio. So sometimes putting things up there can you know, have a benefit. But if you're going to be doing video, make sure that you're actually maximizing the medium. So does the visual element actually add value? And then, you know, another time would be when you're building your audience on YouTube or Facebook. You know, obviously, if you're going to be on YouTube, you're going to need to be using video. Facebook is showing preferential treatment to videos. And so if you really want to build on Facebook and you're serious about it, then I would think about getting into video. A fifth one would be when you want to encourage a more intimate connection with your audience. So for example, this is why we do video at the assembly call, which is very much an audio-based format. It's not like people really need to see us, but we asked our audience, and our most loyal audience members said they liked being able to see us. They like seeing our interaction, and it just helps them feel more connected with the show. And so that's one of the reasons why we've continued to do it, because it certainly adds value to the audience. And then finally, when you want to create one piece of content that can then be repurposed in several different ways, video, a podcast, a transcript, you know, screenshots to be able to use for images, so many different things that you can do once you've recorded a video. And so if that is kind of your primary piece of content, there's a lot of different ways then that you can take that, strip out parts of it, repurpose it. And so really, you know, if you can look at these six elements and, you know, one or all of them are in place, then I think using a video blog may be a good idea for you. But I would certainly, with anything that's going to be time intensive like that and that's hard to do well, you know, my default would be don't do it, do something else. And by that, I mean, just be able to ask yourself these questions. And if you can answer in the affirmative, then yeah, go for it. I would just make sure that you kind of run through that thought process before you jump into it without thinking it through. Chris, any other bullets here that you would add, any that you disagree with or that you'd like to expound upon?
No, I agree completely. And that's weird for me to say, but it has to happen occasionally. So when you say the projected or ultimately measured ROI is positive, it's worth trying. And as an experiment, I did a video just with my phone for my Maker Hacks site about my new 3D printer. So it's super nerdy. And actually, it starts with my cat yawning. It was that exciting. But I thought I'd have a go. And I made lots of mistakes. I didn't have great lighting. I stumbled over my words, as I do on these webinars. But I put it up there on YouTube just to see if people react and respond. So, you know, it's worth putting an hour of time into just trying it out and see if you do get positive feedback. And it might not be great financially for your business, but if it helps people know, like, and trust you, if it gets people to have a sense of your personality, if it gives people another opportunity to see a side of you they may not otherwise experience, then that's great. If you can get some search keywords into the YouTube description, so this is using YouTube in particular, then that might be a way of acquiring a different visitor or customer that you never had access to, because YouTube is the world's second biggest search engine. And that's the main reason I'm looking at it, because in a lot of fields, people turn to YouTube first. Like, my daughter learned how to do her makeup and hair via YouTube, because my wife didn't really grow up having that side of her where she obsessed about hair and makeups. And so when my daughter turned to a teenager, she turned to YouTube, right? What you see with using video is not just the medium, but also the platforms. And on Facebook, you'll often get more views than YouTube, but that could be down to the fact of Facebook autoplay, the fact that they measure a view as being something like 3 seconds versus YouTube, something like 30 seconds, right? So it's worth trying both. YouTube actually is allegedly throttled on Facebook, where they won't give you as much reach if you use a YouTube video directly on Facebook, as opposed to uploading your video to Facebook. So there are a lot of ways to use it, but that repurposing is something I really wanted to reinforce. Once you've got video, you can take the audio, put it onto iTunes, you can have it transcribed, and then you've got an ebook or you've got a transcript. All more opportunities to get more visibility and search traffic and more engagement. So I would encourage you to try it. If you're anything like me, it's not the world's most natural thing to do. And you may spend a lot more time editing than actually creating, but it's worth a try. And you can just do it with your cell phone or your webcam. Don't try to have Hollywood style production values in your first few videos, because the first few are going to be bad. It's like with podcasting. It's worth, like with your writing, your first few drafts are bad, but you can always improve.
Yep. And then just a couple quick examples to walk through here real quick. You know, for example, this video series that we're doing right here, the Rainmaker Site Building Roadmap, you know, this is going to have a positive ROI for us because, you know, the video, the slides, the audio replays, these are going to be useful to customers and to prospects for years to come. And so it made sense for us to have a video component here on these. You know, Chris, you mentioned Maker Hacks and you got a video right here at makerhacks.com. And this is an example where the visual element really adds to the experience and the usefulness of the blog post, right? Because this is, you know, quick and easy filament 3D printer spool holder. And, you know, so being able to actually show people, you know, what it is, what's going on, you know, any type of tutorial, step-by-step, you know, again, part of the reason why these Rainmaker site building roadmaps, why the visual element is important is the step-by-steps and the tutorials that we're able to show. And then, you know, I mentioned over at the assembly call, you know, our videos help us improve the connection with the audience. We're also trying to grow our audience on YouTube, so that helps. And we've seen huge gains, especially recently, you know, being a little bit more strategic with tags and keywords in the description, like Chris mentioned, we've seen a lot more YouTube views. And I think that's a big part of the reason why. And then it also gives us a piece of content for repurposing because we take the audio, turn it into a podcast. We can grab screenshots, use those on our posts. We don't do anything with transcripts, but we could if we wanted to. And then one final tip, if you're going to do video and you're going to be on there, is to comb your hair and put a decent shirt on before you record the video, which I kind of neglected to do for this video that I did yesterday. I kind of just decided in an impromptu nature to do that. And so that message there is actually from my wife, who apparently got a hold of these slides. But
being just real and authentic.
Right.
Just you do you, Jared. Just yeah. Do you.
But it is important to remember, I mean, it's video, so it is a visual. And so just be intentional about it. And the only reason I bring this up is like, I don't think it made a big difference because people aren't watching these videos to look at me. It's more for the audio, but it is on video. And I went back and looked at that video and I was a little bit embarrassed because I was like, gee whiz, you know, at least make yourself look a little presentable. So just a tip to remember that it is on video. It's going to be out there. So make the visual pleasing. So anything else that we need to cover there about video, Chris?
Just try it. Just see if it gels with you. I'm a writer, so I naturally do writing, but you know, it might gel with you. It's worth a try.
Yep. Okay. So question 5 from Roger. When you need to write something with HTML, like Jared composed and placed in Text Expander, can you use the visual editor in Rainmaker and copy the HTML from the text tab? Yes. That's, you know, pretty simple answer. That's how I do most of that. Is I will create a template inside of, you know, a post in Rainmaker and then just get the HTML code. And you know, I like doing the HTML code because a lot of times when I'm adding a template, it's because, you know, I want to add very specific subscribe links or I want to add a form or I want to do something on all of those pages that is a little bit more complicated than just text. And so if you try and copy from the visual editor, you're going to miss, you know, some of those important elements. So copying from the text editor and then pasting into the text editor once you want to, you know, add that text expansion because you're creating the new post, that just ensures that you're going to get all those elements that you need. So the answer is yes, do all of that via HTML. And you want to be careful when you do this because sometimes if you toggle from the text editor to the visual editor, especially if you have forms or something complicated that you're doing over in the HTML editor, sometimes toggling to the visual editor can mess those things up. So you just want to be careful and just, you know, double check it, preview it before you publish, make sure everything looks like you want it to look like. And if it doesn't, see if maybe the toggle from HTML to visual editor might have stripped something out.
Yeah. In fact, Rafal recommends having a user where you actually disable the visual editor in its profile. Yeah. So that's your HTML editing user, which never sees the visual editor. So. Yep.
Yeah. That's a good.
Amelia just jumped in and say, don't steal code, be inspired by code for sure, but don't steal code. So don't go to somebody's site and wholesale, you know, take their entire style sheet or template. That's not good karma.
Yeah. Question 5B from Roger. Does the editorial calendar actually trigger publishing the content? And the answer here is yes. The content will be published on the date or time that you schedule it for, just as with any blog post. So yeah, so you can actually trigger publishing the content from the editorial calendar. If it's scheduled, it's going to go out. So the answer to that is yes. And the next question from Roger, do I create opt-in forms within Rainmaker, not in my third-party mail service, in this example, AWeber? So you can do both, actually. AWeber and other third-party email platforms are going to have tools that allow you to create embeddable opt-in forms. So you're over at AWeber.com, you create your form, you can come in and post it on your Rainmaker site, and those are going to work in any content area. But you can also create opt-in forms using Rainmaker's built-in forms tool that will work with your third-party email service, assuming your third-party email service is one that integrates with Rainmaker. And there are a number of them that do, and we're always adding new ones. If you happen to have a third-party email service you're using that doesn't integrate email support, let us know. That's one of the ways that we obviously figure out which ones we're going to integrate with next. But just to show you real quick, Roger, when you're in editing a form, if you go to the email marketing tab and then select your email marketing provider, that is where you can then select the provider. So if you don't see your provider here, then maybe you haven't set up the integration properly. So just make sure that you have it. And now when you set up MailChimp, now people who subscribe to this form are going to be added to your MailChimp list. And you could do all that from the back end of Rainmaker. And finally, how do you get a background image in your form? I see Chris had that on his MakerHack site. And he does. If you go to MakerHacks.com, you'll see that. And the answer here is that the image is added using custom CSS. So our support staff can help you. If you have an image that you want to add to a form, reach out to support. They'll be able to help you get this done. Anything else you want to add to any of those questions, Chris?
I would just like to say that Rafal helped me. I cheated. I have access to Rafal, but you have access to the support team. So it's a wash, really.
That's right.
But he made it pretty for me. I can do the basics, but it's always good to have a Rafal.
He's good at the pretty stuff.
He is. He's pretty.
Okay. Question number six from Patrick. I'm looking for a model that works where members can be part of a paid forum and experts can offer their help. Is there a way to share in the profits by giving incentives for the experts to join? So, Chris, there's a couple different ways to read this question. I read it, you know, as I read all of these questions, because that's the purpose of these webinars, is like very specifically, how do I do this with Rainmaker question? So that's the answer that I'm going to provide. But there may be kind of a more general discussion that we can have about this strategy as a whole. Yeah. So let me provide the Rainmaker answer first. So, you know, paid form, it's a great idea, Patrick, and it's simple to set up. What you would do is you would create a member group, make the forum accessible only to people with that member group, and then create and sell a product that grants access to the member group. And now access will be restricted to your forum for people who don't have that, and it's paid. So that gets you that paid forum feature that you want. However, there isn't, you know, using Rainmaker, there's not an automated way to share profits with the experts that you'd be inviting in there. You would need to, you know, kind of manually calculate and distribute the total profits from your paid forum membership, or if there's some kind of third-party service that would help you do this, I don't know what it is. You'd probably have to enter the information into it manually still. But as far as doing some kind of profit share with experts in there, there's not really an automated way to do that using Rainmaker.
Yeah. So the automated or semi-automated way would be to make them affiliates, and you could use the affiliate feature, but that's not going to compensate them for all their expertise. It's going to compensate them for driving customers to the membership. The way that it's typically done is if you've got a group of experts and you want to compensate them for their expertise, you give them a percentage. So you calculate how much money the product or service has made at the end of the month, and you say, okay, here's your 15%. And actually, when I started with Copyblogger, that's how I was compensated. I started off voluntarily helping out and being just big mouthed on the forums. And Sonia said, hey, you've got a big mouth. Would you like to be paid for it? And so I started getting compensated. But obviously, that's not something the CFO wanted to do long term. And, you know, they saw something in me that I wasn't seeing, and that I started off helping out, and now it's 2,000% of my time is spent with Copyblogger. That's great. So it's a relationship you can develop that way. The other way of doing it is by doing time windows. So you can say, okay, you get a percentage between this date and this date, and it's exclusive to you. So you do a co-launch. So Patrick does a launch with Jared, and Jared's month is April. Any income that comes in April, Jared gets 50%, say. And then May is a different expert and June is a different expert. And that's how a lot of the rolling webinar launches work. They don't have an affiliate calculation. They just say, whatever happens in this launch, you get your big percentage and that's yours for that period. And then we'll circle back to you. And so Patrick would approach somebody with a decent sized on topic audience and say, hey, would you like to joint venture with this? It converts well. You're an expert, you can participate. And when they do actually participate, it's a nicer way of presenting it to their audience to say, hey, join me in this membership group where we're going to talk about, rather than go check out Patrick, he's awesome.
Yeah, very cool. Good insight there, Chris. 200% of your time, huh?
2000%, I think, at the current, I don't sleep very much. So.
No. All right, on to question 7. This is from Arthur. So on a previous webinar, Jared mentioned a strategy where he displays visitors a form inviting them to join his email list if they say no to becoming a member of his site using an exit pop. What is the process for doing that in Rainmail/Rainmaker? Thank you. All right, so let's walk through that, Arthur. So this is the page that I was talking about that I use in that example. Oh, so and you can see this page if you go to assemblycall.com/join. So this right here is a free membership registration. So first name, last name, email address, password, they click submit. That creates a free membership. I created this using, you know, a standard Rainmaker landing page. I've got all the features over here. Got a testimonial right here. If you scroll down, you'll see a bunch more testimonials over here. So the goal is to drive people to become free members. That's my ideal. All right. And by the way, this is what someone will see when they are not logged in to the site. If they are logged into the site, then they'll see, hey, you're already a member, go here to your member content. So who knows why someone might end up on the join page if they're already a member, but if they do, then we remind them that they're already a member and they can go click right there, a little bit of adaptive content using Rainmaker. So back to this page now, someone's not logged in. So when someone is about to leave the page without taking action, like let's say that they've scrolled and now they're, you know, they're back up here because maybe they want to hit back or they want to type into the address bar, this pop-up will appear. So it says, hey, want just the IU Hoops email newsletter? And that's a component of the free registration. But if they, you know, hey, don't want to activate your free membership, no worries. You can get just the IU Hoops email newsletter. And it, you know, explains the benefits real quick, explains what they get. And they can enter their email address. It's much quicker. You know, maybe people were intimidated by the fact that they had to fill out 5 different fields. Maybe they didn't. They figured, well, I'm not going to be part of the post-game chat and I don't need all this other stuff. But yeah, the newsletter, okay, I'll do that. So it gives you that last chance and it's kind of a step down. So they didn't want to make this commitment and you have to assume that they looked at it because that's really the only thing that's there on the page. So maybe they'll want to do this thing that requires a little bit less commitment and time investment. All right. And then in this particular example, this pop-up is created using Sumo. So that's the one that I use for creating that. And I will say, you know, in site notices, and we went over site notices in the last webinar. So if you missed that, definitely go check that out. But, you know, if you go in here and you adjust the pop-up settings, you can create a similar effect using this built-in feature. Now, I put stars around similar because you can't do exactly the same. You know, Site Notice isn't going to be able to do everything that Sumo can do. There's not actually an exit pop strategy here. But you could, you know, you can tell it to display on scroll or right when people come to the site. If you want to make people scroll, you know, far down the page before they see it, you know, have an HTML element trigger it. So there are some elements here in site notices that will allow you to create a similar effect, albeit not a perfect match if, you know, exit pop is really, you know, what you need for what you're trying to do. So the question then is, has this worked? Okay. And let's go see. I pulled up my Sumo analytics. And if you look at this, so far, so good. So I started this on January 17th of 2017. We are recording this session on March 30th. And so 46,280 people have viewed that page. 46,000 people, 280 have seen the pop-up. 851 of those people have converted for a conversion rate of 1.84%, which I take to be pretty good. And you can see that's actually higher than any of the other pop-ups that we have on the site. So it's worked out pretty well. And I think you see, you know, that kind of step down option, that's a pretty tried and true method for how to use an exit pop-up really effectively. And then, you know, real quick, if you do want to add Sumo to your site, you can enable Sumo by going to settings, email. And then once you do that, check the enable Sumo module followed by hitting save. And when you do that, it's going to look like not a lot happened. But what you need to do is look right up here. Look for this message after saving where it says click here to set up Sumo. And then once you click that, then the Sumo login will come in and you can set everything up right there and you'll be all set and ready to go. Chris, anything that you would like to add?
No, that looks good.
Okay.
Oh, I will say that I now have a pop-up on my MakerHack site based on the last session. I'm going to see how that goes, see if it improves anything. So remember we said about having a yes and no option. So I've got two buttons on there. One of them is a button that just closes the pop-up and the other one is the one that signs up. So I'll report back as to if that increases my conversions or complaints.
Yeah, please do. Please do. Okay, so I see we've got about 15 minutes, so we are going to have some time for some extra questions, and I see that we have some good ones in there, so we're going to cover those. I do real quick want to let you know the upcoming sessions beginning in April. Now, you know, we talked about blogging as content marketing. Now we're going to get into driving traffic. So our next session is going to be how to use Rainmaker's powerful suite of traffic and SEO tools, because there's a lot in there. I got to figure out how I'm going to narrow that down to an hour's worth of stuff to talk about, because there's a lot that we could cover there. And then obviously we'll then split it. What'd you say?
We might have to split it.
Yeah, we may. So we'll see. And then obviously we'll do a Q&A after that. So anything that we don't cover or anything that we cover and you have a follow-up question about, that's why we do the Q&As the week after. So additional questions. Chris, we can take these from the beginning.
Yeah.
And let's see, start with Richard's question.
Yeah, Richard asked, and also Jeff asked a very similar question. Basically, the difference between using Rainmail and MailChimp or Rainmail and AWeber, which should you use? So as we often say, don't overwhelm yourself. So if this is going to be something that holds you back from making progress, then stick with what's comfortable, because it's your business. That's the most important thing. If your business suffers because we've told you to try something new, then we're not doing our job. So, you know, if you've got enough on your plate already, stick with what works. I will say Rainmail in Rainmaker is the best combination, because there's a lot of facilities and features available to you that the other third parties don't offer. So, you know, that's the reason why we built these features, because we saw there was a need in the marketplace, and that having it all integrated is awesome. And that would be the main reason I would encourage it. But you also might find that you save money, and that's not something we really shout about. And, you know, it's not our leading feature of it, but it could well cost you less than the competitors, which, you know, means that you've got money to put into, say, advertising or, you know, increasing your margin or whatever. What do you think, Jared?
Yeah, I think those are all great answers that you gave. I mean, I went from, like, on Assembly Call, for example, I was using MailChimp. I switched over to ConvertKit and then decided to go with Rainmail. And it wasn't really anything negative about MailChimp or ConvertKit. I mean, I think those are great services. And, you know, I used them, enjoyed them, had a lot of success with them. But they're just, you know, my site is on Rainmaker. And so there are things, you know, for me to be able to maximize what Rainmaker can do, I wanted to be able to use Rainmail and really to be able to get the full benefit. And so, you know, I love being able to go in and just, you know, compose emails right from my Rainmaker dashboard, have everything right in there. So I don't, you know, one less place, one less external place that I have to go, I'm happy about, you know. So that, as well as just some of the flexibility that you have and some of the additional ways that you can provide, you know, adaptive content to folks because they're in there, and you know, for all those reasons, having it integrated just really seemed like a good thing to try, and it's worked out really well in practice and has really helped us maximize, you know, what we're doing in terms of growing our audience. So,
and you up to 1,000 subscribers, you can use it for free out of your existing Rainmaker subscription. So if you wanted to try it out, you can basically try it out and not risk anything, because you don't have to close your existing email service down. It's not something that you're going to pay extra for up to 1,000. And then really, once you get to 999 or close to it, you're going to know the answer whether you want to keep the other one or not. I will tell you, the people who have had Daisy import the lists have found better deliverability and better features and have saved money, especially the people coming from things like Infusionsoft. You know, So it's definitely worth looking at both on a financial and also an opportunity point of view.
But, you know, I will say it is nice if Rainmail ends up not being the choice that you make. You know, the ability to integrate with MailChimp and AWeber and ConvertKit and Mad Mimi and all of those, I mean, it does make it still pretty seamless to use those with Rainmaker. Yeah. So it's nice that you have that flexibility.
And we're developing integrations all the time. And we're, you know, we're definitely going to work on Zapier to be able to integrate with all the things. So you're not tied in. So, you know, I would try it out and use the free subscriptions that you get in your base package and then say, is this for me? And try it out.
Chris, Catherine has an interesting question. She says, can you talk about the difference between mobile first and mobile responsive and how Rainmaker is approaching this?
I'm going to steal Amelia's answer because she's actually more in tune with this world of, you know, stuff than I am. So responsive is used to describe the possibility of websites adapting to the output device. So your phone, your iPad / Kindle, and the desktop computer screen. So it's adapting to your viewport. It's adapting to the screen you're using. And that includes shrinking your window down, which, you know, if you've got so much screen real estate, you might want to have two windows on screen. You don't want one that's being fixed to 1024 wide and it is unviewable if you shrink it down. Mobile first is where the design principles are based on the mobile device initially, and then it's made to be responsive for bigger screens and desktops. And what you see in effect is the optimum experience is designed for mobile. If you're going to be using it while walking around, if you're going to be using it in the car, primarily, that's the approach to take, mobile first, because, you know, think of Instagram, right? It has a desktop experience, but 9 times out of 10, Instagram, you're going to be using on your phone. And so there,
99 times out of 100 for that one.
Yeah. So it wouldn't make sense to optimize the desktop experience and then say, okay, let's compromise for mobile. It just wouldn't make sense. All our Rainmaker themes are always going to be responsive now and going forwards. But some of them were designed with a mobile first point of view. That isn't to say that the desktop experience sucks. It just says, what are you prioritizing? Who are you prioritizing? What is the use case for this? So I would say a realtor or a restaurant or a takeout or some sort of live venue or some face-to-face event, some meetup, they're going to be mobile first in my mind because the use case of somebody trying to find you, if they're working out with a group of people, what they're going to do, if they then have to find you, if they want to like compare one venue to another, and they're walking around or in the car, that's a mobile first experience. But I would say things like very considered purchases, like consulting or coaching or anything like that, you might want to use that screen real estate to really drive home all the differentiation and differences and benefits of working with you. So I wouldn't suggest selling StudioPress sites or Rainmaker as a mobile first because I think it's a considered purchase. And we don't have a physical location. But if you're advertising open mic night and it's on Tuesdays at 7 p.m., then people are going to be using the phone to find you because they're out in bars or they're with a group of friends. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, I would definitely recommend folks go check your analytics and see where your traffic's coming from. Because I remember, I don't remember the last time I checked this for Assembly Call, for example, like the split between mobile and desktop. And I just looked and it used to be right around 50-50. And now mobile is 64%, desktop is 26%, and tablet is 10%. So that's interesting.
I know my
that's where things are going. So, I mean, you gotta, it's a great question. It's good to be aware of.
On my site, Android has definitely taken over as the leading operating system visiting my site, which I'm really shocked about. So, you know, it's it's one of those things that there is a little catch 22. If your site's awful for mobiles, don't expect lots of mobile repeat visits. But you know, if it's okay, have a look, see if mobile's growing, see if it's overtaking. Because for many people, mobile is becoming a dominant user on your site. So it at least has to be responsive. All of our themes are responsive. They're not necessarily designed for mobile first.
Richard asks, will you add an exit pop function to site notices in the future?
Yes.
Yes. Excellent. To anybody who's watching the replay, we're recording this on March 30th. So you might already be added by the time you watch this, just FYI.
Yeah. And I'm constantly playing with code, which is why we've got our own sites. So I'm going to be doing some experiments. So there might be some JavaScript code you can get earlier. But yeah, it's all coming because that's why we dog food. We eat our own dog food so we can see what's missing.
Exactly. Then Lisa asked, where can I find registration links for your upcoming webinars? I don't know that we have them anywhere yet, but I think what we'll do is we have in the Rainmaker site building roadmap page, we have that set up as an LMS. We can put them, we have the next four created, so we can put them there so that you can go and register for all of them at once if you want to.
Yeah, they'll definitely be shared.
Yep.
And the site, the registrations are set up. I just don't think we've got the links handy right now.
Yep. And the other thing is, Lisa, we send those all out via email as well. So when we send the replay out, you'll get the link for the next session. And then we will send another reminder for that session next week. So just check your emails. And if for some reason you're not getting those emails, let us know. Just let support know. We'll make sure that you get on that list so that you get all of that communication. Yep. All righty. Well, Chris,
an hour.
We're right at an hour. Exactly. And I think we're going to do another survey after this one. So we really appreciate your feedback on those surveys, both the answers to the numerical questions and then, you know, the short answer feedback that you guys give. It's really, really helpful. Okay, Kelton's saying
we'll do
no survey
after the next webinar, not the Q&A. So.
Yeah, okay, survey after the next one. And the next webinar will be interesting. Lots to go over in traffic and SEO. So I'm looking forward to putting that presentation together for everybody.
What do you think about splitting it into two shorter webinars rather than one long webinar?
What do we have right now as the second one in that series?
I know the first one, it was originally about SEO, and then we said split it into traffic and SEO.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think we should spend more time on it. So we'll figure out what makes sense, but we'll use the next two to really dive into that topic.
Yeah, and we're hoping to have our guest expert, Sean, do a lot of SEO bits because he's like super up to date with all the SEO stuff. So
yes, he is. Yes, okay. He is.
That looks good feedback. Thank you. And looks like everybody's excited about traffic and two rather than one. So I think that's our answer.
Good. All right. Sounds good to me.
Awesome.
All right, everybody.
Thank you, everybody.
Yep. Thank you for being here. And we will talk to you next week on the next Rainmaker Site Building Roadmap.